We are studying the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita called Dhyana Yoga, the Yoga of Meditation, and it is also more aptly called Atma Sanyama Yoga, the Yoga of Complete Mind Control or Self-Control. In our last previous class, we discussed that here is a person who wants to become a yogi. In this sixth chapter, the Lord is telling that before you can progress, not only in spiritual field, but in any field, mind control is the most essential thing. And for that, physically, we have to keep the body in certain posture. Samam kaya shiro grivam dharayan achalam sthiraha, etc. Then the asana, the seat upon which we sit, also should be made in such a way it is not at a very high place, not at a low place, not uneven, and not in a place not troubled, surrounded by mosquitoes, animals, plenty of noises, etc., etc. So these are conditions fulfilled, and certain external conditions to be fulfilled. So he says, yoga is not for a person who eats too much and who doesn't eat at all or doesn't eat adequately. Yoga is not a person who doesn't sleep sufficiently. Yoga is not for a person who keeps excessively. What a marvelous psychological truth. Let us remember all the time, whenever we are thinking about Bhagavad Gita, not only it is Brahma Vidya, it is also Upanishad, it is also Yoga Shastra. At the end of every chapter, iti Bhagavad Gita-su Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastra, these three are uttered. What is Yoga Shastra? That is practical Vedanta, how to convert practically in our day-to-day life about our, if we want to progress in spiritual life, we have to control every aspect of our life. That is called Yoga Shastra. Yoga means day-to-day life, every second, how we can control ourselves. So, in the verse 16, Arjuna, this yoga is neither for him who overeats, nor for him who observes a complete fast or inadequate amount of nutrition. It is neither for him who is given to too much sleep, nor even for him who is ceaselessly awake, means active. There must be a perfect harmony between every aspect of life. That's what he is telling. Yukta ahara viharasya, yukta cheshtasya karmasu, yukta swapna avabodhasya, yogo bhavati dukkha. Yoga, the practice of spiritual discipline, becomes a source of joy and removes all unpleasantness, suffering, etc., only to the extent we fulfill some of these conditions. What are they? Yukta ahara. It is food which is taken in right conditions, right quantities, right type of food. It is said in Hindu scriptures, food is contaminated because of three types of doshas, defects. Food may be contaminated with dirt, dust, hair, and other impure things, and that is one type of defect. Then, by nature, certain types of foods create certain type of adverse reactions which are not good, not only for spiritual life, for any type of life. For example, I will recollect, and our devotees must keep in mind, whenever I recollect, immediately you should be able to connect what I am talking about. That means you should have read thoroughly the life of Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, Swamiji, Swami Brahmanandji, etc. So Sri Ramakrishna was brought to Kamarpur by his mother because his mother was under the impression that her son had become somewhat deranged. But of course, you know, no mother gives up hope. Funny thing was that for most Indian mothers, the remedy for madness is to get them married. Anyway, sometimes it works. Most often, it only exacerbates the problems. Okay, here, Sri Ramakrishna's mother, and she found that it was not abating. So she called in a kind of mantrikas, people who have some mastery over some ghosts. So the people were called, and they were really people who had control of the ghost, chandas, they are called chandi. So they invoked their devata, and the devata came and spoke to them. No, this young man is not suffering from this mental disease. He appears to be like this because of his spiritual condition. The mother of Sri Ramakrishna must have been completely relieved. Then something strange happened. Sri Ramakrishna was very fond of eating too much of betel nut. And betel nut is supposed to increase lust. And we are all trying to control our quantum of lust which is within us. So the devata directly addressed Sri Ramakrishna and said, "Oh Gadai, why are you eating so much of betel nut? Don't you know it increases lust?" So this incident proves certain facts to us. The first fact is these devatas, these creatures of higher powers do exist even if we do not interact with them. It is a fact of life. Ramakrishna's life illustrates the existence of higher worlds, the existence of higher beings in the higher worlds, and there are innumerable variations in those worlds. All those things Sri Ramakrishna's life definitely proves. Okay, second fact is that these beings can, not all beings are harmful. They can also help us. Here is very good piece of advice. How did the mantrikas know that Sri Ramakrishna was eating too much of betel nut? And betel nut produces so much of lust, which for an ordinary person, is they love to increase their desire so that they can enjoy the more. There is a psychology here. The more intense our desire, proportionate will be the pleasure or happiness that we derive. So that is why married people, they go on chewing the betel nut, etc., mixed with so many spices to increase their power of enjoyment. So here are creatures. Sri Ramakrishna, you are supposed to be a spiritual aspirant. So you perhaps do not know that this is something which is not good for your constitution. This is what some food materials, for example, too much of coffee produces too much restlessness of the mind. Too much of wine can create intoxication, and we become loose, loose in morals, loose in our speech, and loose in our habits. Everything will be ruined through addiction to the either drugs or drinks, etc., etc. So Swami Brahmananji Maharaj had given us three important suggestions, not suggestions really, three important hints that how we can make ourselves very healthy. So what was he telling? First, food should be nutritious. Second, we should be able to digest it, because even something nutritious, I'll give an example, that there are so many people who are very fond of cheese, you know, Indian paneer we call it. It can be made into very tasty curry, paneer, curry we call it, palang paneer, etc. In any way, it can be very tasty. But so many people, they cannot digest it. It creates constipation if they take too much of it. So food not only should be nutritious, it should be suitable and it should be digestible to us. And it should be taken in a particular quantity, which is just right for us. And that depends upon each individual. third rule, that food should not create adverse reaction. That's why drinking too much tea or coffee or wine or certain materials like onion, garlic, etc., our scriptures tell us that they produce very adverse effect. So, yukta ahara, the right type of food, taking these three hints of Swami Brahmanandaji. Vihara means entertainment. There are some people who don't know how to pass time. And to kill time, they invent so many things. Eric Fromm used to say that man invented machines so that his physical labor can be reduced and he can have more time to enjoy. And unable to face too much of time, he invented more machines to kill the available time. What a tragedy it is. Then, yukta cheshtasya karmasu. The activities that we have to do, our duties and our hobbies, etc., they must be perfectly balanced because everything requires time. You want to eat too much, it takes too much time. Besides other harmful effects, you want to entertain yourself, that means you are killing time. You want to engage yourself in too many activities, that also killing of time. So that is why he says, yukta swapna avabodhasya, right type of food and right and requisite time of entertainment, right type of activities, right type of sleep and right amount of wakefulness. If these conditions are fulfilled, yogo bhavati dukkha, only then and only then practice of spiritual disciplines conduce to our happiness and destroy our unhappiness and by destroying our bondage. Yoga, which rids one of woe, is accomplished only by him who is regulated in diet and recreation, regulated in performing actions, and regulated in sleep and wakefulness. Here is most wonderful practical suggestions for us. Then, the Bhagavan Krishna is Lord is telling us, yada viniyatam chittam atmanyeva avatishthate nispruha sarvakamebhyo yukta ityuchyate tada. When the mind, which is thoroughly disciplined, gets fixed on God alone, then the person who is free from all yearnings for all earthly enjoyments is said to be established in yoga. We are all trying to find out, am I a spiritual aspirant? If I am really a spiritual aspirant, how do I know I am such? So here is two hints. Two characteristics must become manifest by such a person. What are those two characteristics? When the mind doesn't want to think anything else excepting God. It doesn't mean that we are sitting and thinking about God. Whatever we may do, as Sri Ramakrishna used to say, whichever direction the boat moves, but the compass always points to the north. Sri Ramakrishna used to give many, many homely examples. There was a woman who is husking paddy, and at the same time, she was also carrying on so many businesses. So she's talking with the customer, you owe me so much and you take this one. Today I have got these special things. You can take so many activities, multitasking. But he says, do you know where her mind is? Her mind is on her hand, lest the pestle can fall upon her hand and hurt her. So like that, whatever may be a person doing, the mind is fixed on that particular idea only. Sri Ramakrishna sometimes gives what is called not to so elegant examples. One such example he gives in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna is just like there is a paramour and she is doing everything in her house, including serving her husband. She is not neglecting her children, not neglecting her husband, not neglecting anything. But even though she is doing everything, her mind never forgets her lover. She is constantly remembering only him. Interestingly, in Vaishnava Sampradaya tradition, this is what is called Parakiya Bhava. So, there are five relationships, attitudes, bhavas, which every devotee has to take up one or the other and develop a particular relationship with his Ishtadevata, chosen deity. Shanta, Dasya, Sakhya, Vatsalya, and Mathura, Panchabhavas. We all know more or less about them. The last one, Mathura, means the relationship that exists between a lover and a beloved. And this has got two varieties, Kanta Bhava and Parakiya Bhava. Kanta Bhava means a chaste wife, she thinks of nothing else excepting her beloved husband. But she is restrained by so many social rules, regulations, etc. But the other one is Parakiya, means a woman belonging to somebody else. A married woman, she has her own husband, but she is thinking of some other man, and she developed a very, very strong, intimate relationship with him. And whatever, just now as I mentioned, whatever she has been, she is engaged in, her mind is completely, one-pointedly fixed only on her beloved, her lover. So this is called Parakiya Bhava. And the example of that Kanta Bhava is Rukmini's attitude towards Bhagavan Krishna and Radha's attitude towards Krishna. That is why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has advocated Parakiya Bhava. It has nothing to do with externally misunderstood, immoral, illegal relationships. It is the strength of attachment and love that is being exemplified here, glorified here. So coming back to our subject, when a yogi's mind is totally fixed upon only God or Atman or Purusha, whatever we may call our highest ideal, that is one characteristic. Secondly, it doesn't desire anything. It desires only one thing. There is a strong desire, and that desire is only one desire. And that desire is not scattered among, I want a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a little bit of something else. These two characteristics, I want only God and I don't want anything else. When a spiritual aspirant can fulfill these two conditions, only then is he fit to be called a real spiritual aspirant. Let us not forget, here yogi means a spiritual aspirant. Nothing to do with Raja Yoga or any other yoga. Yogi means whether a person is taking recourse to karma or bhakti or raja or chitta or jnana. If anybody whose goal is God and who strives his level best with his dominant faculty, he is called a yogi. And a yogi, a person can be really qualified to be called a yogi when his mind is fixated upon God and when he doesn't desire anything else. Of course, this is the highest definition. It doesn't mean we are not yogis. So our goal is slowly to reduce our attachments to worldly objects and to fix our mind only upon God. So he's telling, when the mind, which is thoroughly disciplined, gets fixed on God alone, then the person who is free from yearning for all enjoyments is said to be established in yoga. And we must follow the teachings, the statements, by giving examples. That's why I'm so fond of, as far as I can remember, incidents from the lives of our holy trio, Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother and Swamiji, direct disciples, great sadhus that I know, and every other great saints, Ramana Maharshi, etc., so that the teaching will remain more firmly fixed in our mind. So when a mind is completely devoid of desires for any other object and it is totally fixated only on one desire, that is God, what is the state of that mind? Can an analogy be given? So the Lord is giving a beautiful analogy. Imagine a place, a room, where there is absolutely no wind and there is a candle which is lit and it is kept there. And go on looking at the candle. You will not find the slightest flicker in that candle. And that flickerless candle light is compared to that mind which is devoid of any desire excepting one desire for God. This is what is being introduced now by Bhagavan Krishna. Yatha deepo nivatastho nengate saupama smrita yogino yatachittasya yunjato yogam atmanaha. As a light doesn't flicker in a windless place, such is stated to be the picture of the disciplined mind of the yogi practicing meditation on God. Let us analyze this verse beautifully. Yatha, just like nivatastaha, vata means wind. Nivata means where there is no wind. And in that place, deepaha, a light is lit. And what happens? You go on looking there. Na ingate, it doesn't flicker, it doesn't move. Continuously, constantly, only that flickerless, movementless, shakylessness of light is seen. Sa upama, so upama means sa upama smrita. This is taken as a best analogy for illustrating the mind of a true yogi. So yoginaha of the spiritual aspirants, yata chittasya, he controlled his mind, he had progressed in spiritual life and he has not reached the goal and he is struggling to reach his goal, which is to realize God. Yunjataha, constantly is fulfilling all the conditions that are necessary to progress in spiritual life. Atmanaha yogaha, yogam, he is trying to become united with God. And it has reached such a state where there is no other desire that can bring restlessness to the mind. Here the analogy is, if there is one desire, the mind becomes moving away from God, it gets fixated on God. One of the bright examples again that we get is the story of Jada Bharata, King Bharata. He was a king. He renounced the world. His name was Bharata. He went into a deep forest. He practiced meditation for a long time. And he attained to that state of mind where his mind is totally fixated. But he has some lurking attachments unconsciously. Beautiful story. One day he saw that a tiger was chasing a pregnant female deer, and the deer in fright jumped a small stream and in the process gave birth to a baby deer, and then the baby deer was floating there helplessly, and this Bharata, King Bharata, happened to see it. He ran, took that small helpless baby and it became a deer. And we all know, whenever we call somebody dear or someone calls us dear, be very, very, very careful about it. So he felt all his attachment to God is now fixated upon this baby dear. And he was with a thousand eyes, as it were, guarding it and bringing the tenderest pieces of grass that he could get whole day and night. His mind totally diverted only to the thought of this deer. And in that condition only, he happened to die. He was thinking of his deer. And it is said in the scriptures, whatever be the last thought in a man's mind, he will become that. because the animal deer, for the last thought, he was born, reborn in the body of a deer. But then, he was a great yogi, don't forget. He practiced yoga for a long time and he had realized, oh, this was an obstruction for my yoga. I should have given up this attachment. I should have looked after it for some time and let it into the forest, let it join its own group, and whatever happens, that's not in my hands. But then his attachment became too much. So that this story teaches us some lessons. Let me complete the story. So whole life as a deer, he went on meditating upon God. Nobody, of course, could fathom. It is just like a deer. And then next birth again, after giving up the body of the deer, he became a human being. But then he was born in a family where he started pretending he was a Jedi, idiot. And he grew up, people thought he was an idiot, and they used to, even this most marvelous thing, you know, this family started looking down upon that boy. This is a burden on our family, but let us feed him, let us use him as the worst of the servants. All the hard work, hard labor, he will be told. And this boy never protested, why are you behaving so unjustly? Whatever they ask him, he will do cheerfully, untiringly. And of course, when there is no work, he will sit under a tree and go on staring. And he grew up, and it is said, a free mind, a mind without worries, it digests whatever it eats and puts on weight. Bahut thakda ho jayega. So he became very strong. One day he was sitting idly under a tree, and King Rahugana happened to go that way in a palanquin, being borne by some carriers of the palanquin. And one of the bearers fell sick, and they recruited this takada looking young man. And being unaccustomed, because to carry a palanquin, one requires a little bit of training. That's why they go on singing a sing-song way, ho, hai, ho, hai, ho, hai, like that. And then only the rhythm can be maintained. The king inside, he was getting jolts because of the unevenness, and he started cursing him. And then this boy opened first, Jadabharata opened his mind for the first time. Said, oh king, whom are you addressing? You are a stupid person. Are you addressing the body? Boy, every body is stupid only. Are you addressing the soul? Every soul is Sarvajna only. Tell me, whom are you addressing? And the king, to his great shock, surprise, he realized that I am going to get spiritual instructions. I have not attained the qualifications because I got angry. And so what is this of meeting some other person? Here is the greatest knower of Brahman. Immediately he came out of the palanquin, fell at his feet, got instructions. This beautiful story you get in Bhagavatam, it is worth studying this story by itself. Now, what I am trying to tell you is that person's mind must become absolutely steadfast, but we should be on the outlook, because a concentrated mind, if it is deviated, it becomes concentrated on that other object also. So that's why Yatheshwanda Maharaj used to warn spiritual aspirants, before you become pure, do not acquire concentration, because you may acquire concentration. A scientist, a musician, a sportsman, a person working in the circus, all of these people require tremendous amount of concentration. But that doesn't mean that they are great people. They can be even demons. In fact, it is said a pickpocket has greater concentration than even a most advanced spiritual aspirant. So, we must not only develop concentration, we must be aware that this concentration does not become attached to some unworthy worldly object. So, one has to go on striving in order to attain self-knowledge, or to know who one is. So here is a beautiful analogy. A mind which is completely concentrated and no other worldly desires are there even in the unconscious, and this person wants only God, nothing else. Such a person's mind is compared to a light that is placed in a windless place, absolutely no flickering. No flickering means no restlessness. So then what does one gain? Suppose a person, he decided to become a yogi and he fulfills all these conditions regarding food, activities, sleep, rest, entertainment, etc. And he develops this tremendous power of concentration and his mind becomes absolutely restful like the light, which doesn't deviate even for a millisecond. What does he get? Because we are all utilitarians. Before we undertake any endeavor, we go on questioning ourselves, what do I get out of it? So the Lord is answering, Yatra uparamate chittam niruddham yoga sevaya yatra cha eva atmanam atmana atmanam pashyan atmani tushyati. The state in which, curbed through the practice of yoga, the mind becomes still, and in which, realizing God through subtle reason, the soul rejoices only in God. It is a beautiful hint. How do we know we are progressing in spiritual life? Two hints. First of all, our happiness increases by leaps and bounds. I have explained it in my past classes many times. We are supposed to meditate on Purusha, Atman, Brahman, etc. And God is described as Sat, Chit, and Ananda. Sat means absolute existence, Chit means absolute knowledge, and Ananda, untrammeled bliss, not happiness, because happiness has got its opposite, unhappiness. Pleasure has got in displeasure. Good has evil. But bliss has no opposite. That is why deep sleep is compared to Anandamaya Kosha. So when a yogi develops such a purified mind, he gets tremendous joy only in God. This idea, how much a person obtains true joy, true bliss, is being elaborated in the next shloka also. But in this is yatra chittam uparamate. So what type of chitta means mind here? Niruddham is completely controlled. Yoga sevaya, by the constant practice of yoga. And what does it do? Uparamate, it has developed that ability to withdraw itself from any object and fix itself upon any object the master commands it to be with. This dharana and dhyana, the capacity to withdraw and the capacity to fix. Pratyahara means to withdraw the mind from any object at our will. Dharana means to keep it on any object for any length of time according to our pleasure. That complete control is called yoga. So, yatra cha eva atmana atmanam. By his own mind, he sees nothing else, no other thought is there excepting the thought of God. Pashyan atmani tushyati. He gets supreme satisfaction. Why? Because God is Ananda Swarupa. So as we progress towards God, we get more and more Ananda. Ramakrishna used to give a very beautiful example. That example, as a person moves nearer to the seashore, he gets more and more of the cool breeze. So this is an indication of how we know how to know whether we are progressing in spiritual life. Our body becomes healthy, mind becomes healthy, that is called sat. So mind becomes pure, mind becomes good, mind is fixated in satya. That is why sat sangha, company of the good. So only good people want to cultivate the company of good people. So they become good, they become unselfish, and they become truthful, and more and more. And that is how we can know whether we are progressing in spiritual life or not. Secondly, our capacity to understand the words of our guru, the words of sages and saints, the words of the scriptures, through understanding, through intuition, becomes more and more manifest as we progress in spiritual life. So that is the only way to understand. And yes, last 10 years back, I was happy, but now I am very happy. Yesterday, I was not that happy, but today I am very, very happy. And tomorrow, I will be happier. And the day after tomorrow, I will be the happiest. This is called progress in life. That is why Swami Vivekananda said that life is a journey from not untruth to truth, but from a lower truth to higher truth. From a lower state of consciousness to a higher state of consciousness. From a lower state of happiness to a higher state of happiness. Sri Ramakrishna expresses this teaching so beautifully. He says, there are three types of happinesses: Vishayananda, Bhajanananda, and Brahmananda. So ordinary people, worldly people, unspiritual people, all their pleasures come only from worldly things. Spiritual aspirants, they must progress into Bhajanananda, that they rejoice in thinking about God, in associating with devotees, in studying holy scriptures, and they get tremendous joy out of it. Not as a bounden, painful duty, but they derive tremendous joy out of it. But those who are fortunate to know Atman, Brahman, they enjoy Brahmananda. So life is a journey from a lower state of happiness, that means from Vishayananda to Bhajanananda to Brahmananda. So this beautiful fact is being repeatedly pointed out to us in the next shloka, 21st shloka. Sukham atyantikam yat yatta buddhi grahyamati indriyam veti yatra nachayvayam sthitas chalati tatvataha. Nay, in which the soul experiences the eternal and the super sensuous joy, which can be apprehended only through the subtle and purified intellect, and wherein established, the said yogi moves not from truth on any account. So here is a most marvelous result. If somebody says, we don't know whether God exists. Many people also say that we believe in God, but they don't really believe in God. It is only words that escape from their mouth. But if somebody really understands, God is of the nature of Sat, Chit, and Ananda. And gradual, slow maybe, but steady, gradual progress towards more Sat, more Chit, and more Ananda is the only way we can understand what is called progress in spiritual life. So sukham atyantikam, the highest type of happiness. What type of happiness? All of us also know what is happiness in this world. We know beautiful things, we hear beautiful music, we smell very fragrant things, and we touch beautiful climate, etc. But beautiful tastes also we know. These are all Vishayananda. The happiness broken, extremely limited, unsatisfactory, ultimately binding. This is the pleasures that we derive from the objects of this world. But this yogi's happiness is atyantikam, the highest. Yet, atindriyam, it is not to be compared. There is no parallel at all to this happiness we derive constantly from the sense organs. But how do we know? Buddhigrahyam, our subtle intuitive mind alone understands I'm in a state of bliss. So it doesn't mean it is even a kind of understanding. This is a human language. We have to convey highest thoughts to other people who can only understand a little bit of these word meanings. So buddhigrahyam, really, the highest ananda is not even buddhigrahya, cannot be understood by the buddhi. We enjoy, we experience, but there is no expression. That is why avagmanasa gocharam is beyond description, beyond thought, beyond speech. Every day we are singing, Namo Namo Prabhu Vakyamana Atita. So, really, the happiness a yogi derives cannot be expressed, much less to be understood by anybody else. Then he says, Veti Yatra Nachayivayam Sthitaschalati Tatvataha. And when a yogi is experiencing this Brahmananda, Atmananda, then he becomes completely still and he understands truly what is that highest happiness. These are more or less hints how we can understand what type of happiness we really enjoy if we practice spiritual life. Here the important point we need to understand is that everybody, even worldly persons, they only want happiness. No worldly person is attached to any object in this world. He seems to be attached only because he is expecting some kind of pleasure, some kind of happiness, some kind of joy. The moment that object doesn't fulfill that purpose, then the person discards it. Vishayan vishavat tyajet. Like all the vishayas, the objects of senses are given up like, and every day people murder people and people rob people. All of them, if they are asked, it was this your intention from the very beginning, they would deny it. They thought that if they obtain something, they would be very happy people. But then that object ceases to give happiness. Why does it cease to give happiness? Because of only one reason. Happiness or unhappiness doesn't lie in the object. It is we who derive this happiness. It is we get happiness from within ourselves. To give a crude analogy, that in a deep place, some object, our purse or whatever it is, has fallen. Now there is no way we can go there. So what do? You take up a hook and slowly lower the hook and try to fix that object to that hook and pull it up. Our deriving happiness or unhappiness is exactly like that. Sri Ramakrishna, the master psychologist, gives a beautiful example. Says there is a camel and it goes on chewing thorny bushes and the blood starts coming because the thorns are pricking deep into its gums. But then the foolish camel thinks that the blood, that very tasty blood, is coming from the thorns. Or a dog worrying a bone or playing with a bone, and it goes on chewing, its own gums bleed, and it thinks the blood is coming from the bone. So this is an apt analogy that, really speaking, we are the treasure houses of Ananda. But objects help us to get a little bit of our own happiness. Sri Ramakrishna cannot describe, nobody can describe the Brahmananda. But he has to convey how this Ananda, so much Ananda, can be given. And you have to pardon me, I'm quoting his own words, that when a devotee becomes so much imbued with bhakti and his mind is totally fixed on God, Ramakrishna is expressing that every pore of the skin becomes like a young sexual organ capable of deriving the highest sexual pleasure. If one sex object can give so much of happiness, then what about billions of cells all combined, not for a moment, but for all the time giving? If you have heard about the songs of Solomon in the Bible, Swami Vivekananda praised them highly and said, they're all what is called romantic songs. And these songs are expression of devotion of God. And even if you hear these Sufi songs or ghazals, truly speaking, they're only trying to express the joy one gets from the beloved. Only thing is, they disguise the beloved as a man's beloved, and the man is considered as a sadhaka. So wine is considered that state of intoxication. A drink, like in tantras, is the instrument through which man takes the name of God. Name of God becomes amrita, and by drinking that amrita, a person derives the highest joy of God. That is called intoxication. This beautiful expression in many bhajans, especially one Bengali bhajan, Ami shurapan korine sudha khai joy kali bole. I do not drink ordinary wine, I drink the immortal nectar, sudha. And how? By taking my mother's divine name, joy kali bole. So here is an expression, sukham atyantikam, atindriyam, no sense organ can ever describe it. Another point we need to understand here is, each sense organ gives a kind of pleasure which is confined only to that sense organ and only to that particular sense object. But just let us exercise our imagination and imagine that all the five sense organs are in contact with infinite number of objects, and at the same time we are deriving all the enjoyment or happiness that is derivable from these so-called infinite number of objects. If that could be an analogy, that could be the nearest description of what is called Ananda Amruta. Rama Nama Rasa Pije. Drink Pibare Rama Rasam. Beautiful songs are there everywhere. These are the true experiences of great souls. So this highest happiness, which is called bliss, that is not imaginable by any worldly person, but a yogi enjoys it. Only a yogi who had progressed these two conditions. He had no other desire. Even the thought of enjoying any worldly object doesn't enter into his mind, and his mind is completely become one with God. When these conditions are fulfilled, then what does he get? Sukham atyantikam, indescribable joy will come to such a person. And what type of joy is it? It is indescribable. But here is, in the next verse, 22nd verse, shloka, the Lord is telling, yam labdhvacha aparam labham मन्यते नाधिकं ततः यस्मिन् स्थितो न दुःखेन गुरुणा अपि विचाल्यते. एंड हैविंग ऑब्टेन्ड विच हैप्पीनेस ही डजंट रेकन एनी अदर गेन एज ग्रेटर देन दिस हैप्पीनेस एंड एस्टैब्लिश्ड इन विच हैप्पीनेस ही इज नॉट शेकन इवन बाय द हेवीएस्ट ऑफ सॉरोस. दिस इज अ ब्यूटिफुल वर्स and full of significance, which we will discuss in our, elaborate in our next class. But when a person really, really feels that this is the highest profit, what is the highest profit? God. And when a yogi gets this God, call it Atman, call it Brahman, call it Purusha, call it paradise, call it kingdom of heaven, call it Nirvikalpa Samadhi, call it Satori, call it by whatever name you like. These are all indescribable names, but meaning one thing. Having reached which, the person knows there is no higher attainment, there is nothing else which is as great as this profit, and having been established in that bliss, even the greatest sorrow or unhappiness cannot touch me. I remember a beautiful incident which I read recently. There was a great Zen master, and he was minding one temple, Buddhist temple, perhaps in China, and an evil leader had come there with his followers. And seeing those, all the inmates of that temple have fled away. But this man sitting in Padmasana, completely unmoved. And he just unwavering smile. The evil leader came, stood in front of him, said, "Do you know who I am?" "Of course I know who you are. Do you know that there is no man who derives greatest joy in piercing another man with this sword and finishing him off?" And the master replied, "You are meeting for the first time a man through whom a sword can be pierced. And at the same time, he thinks this is the greatest joy on earth." Hearing this reply, the leader was charmed. He was overcome. He bows down. And without harming that man, he goes away. Similar story also, our devotees can recall. Alexander came across a king, a great rishi, muni, a holy man, and he was so impressed. He told him, "I am returning back to Greece. You please come with me." And the yogi refused. Alexander got angry and he said, "Do you know to whom you are talking? That I can kill you this moment." The yogi laughed and laughed and laughed and said that this is the greatest lie I have ever heard in my life. Meaning, I am the Atman and nobody can kill the Atman, and Atman cannot be killed. It can neither be the killer nor be the killed. And you are claiming you can kill me, the Atman, and therefore it is the greatest lie. The point is, this having obtained which, a man for eternity knows there is no other gain, and that means he has reached the peak of his attainment, and he will ever abide in that Brahman, and he will enjoy the greatest Brahmananda of which we have been talking. And at that time, whatever happens to the body mind, because any dukkha, any unhappiness, any tapatraya, any suffering cannot touch the Atman. It can only touch the body, not even the mind. We will discuss this beautiful verse in all its implications in our next class, probably next Sunday.